Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Ferdinand Vogler, a product designer who specializes in digital experiences, and we're going to talk about copying versus stealing today. This episode is brought to you by Balsamiq. They just came up with a new web app called Balsamiq Cloud. It's the best tool for fast, approachable, collaborative wireframing. You can capture ideas, collaborate on designs, and get everyone on board. Check it out for yourself. Try it free for 30 days at balsamiq.cloud. Hi, Ferdinand.
Hi, happy to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. We have a very interesting topic today. I'm very curious how it goes.
Me as well. Let's go.
Let's start with a short questionnaire so that we can learn about you first and then dive into the main topic. How does it sound?
Perfect. Let's go.
Question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I call myself a digital product designer. That means I really... Yeah, believe in the symbiosis of design and code. And at the moment, I do work as a front-end developer in a Swiss agency, but my main focus is on finishing my master thesis, which is a company concept about a company called NutriDelta, which is a technology which helps people with allergies make better food decisions online.
Wow, and that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's going on at the moment.
What is your role exactly in the thesis? Is it, are you getting, what kind of education are you getting?
The master program is quite unique in Europe, and that's one of the reasons I went to Switzerland from Germany. It's called Design Entrepreneurship. And we have people specializing in design research or the path which I'm doing, which is design entrepreneurship, where you apply with a startup idea, more or less, and you get like all the knowledge necessary to follow that dream, like all the entrepreneurial and business knowledge, which designers are often lacking. You can then do there in a master's degree. So, since I was always thinking also on the business side or from the product side, as you could say, that sounded very interesting to me. And since I had a similar thing after my bachelor thesis, which was a startup idea with a prototype, I decided to continue with that whole thing and see where it takes me.
That is wonderful. That's exactly what the world was lacking, and I'm glad that you have that in Switzerland. Really, really happy for you. Mm-hmm. Can you share a bit of your background? What is your story? How did you get there?
Mm-hmm. I think it all started with me always drawing a lot as a child. So it started off with cartoons. In all shapes and sizes, as you could say. And then at one point I was in a place called Kidstown, which is like the city which gets set up in the summer holidays. And we had like a magazine in the city. And I had this old laptop where I was designing the magazine, and I had reporters running around interviewing the kid mayor, and I never really thought about what I was doing there. And then with 12 for Christmas, I got a book called My First HTML Website. And that was like the times of Dreamweaver MX 2004, like when it still belonged to Macromedia, which was later bought by Adobe. And I kind of took things from there. And since the world is usually a very badly designed place and there's work everywhere, people started contacting me to design stuff for them. So be it bands or pizza places or the massage practice of a friend's mother doing therapeutic massages. I never really thought that you could study this. I just did it and I liked the programs. And when it then came to think about, yeah, what do I want to do in the future? I found out that the whole thing is called communication design or product design or graphic design, how you would like to call it. But I like to think about design a bit more holistically. So I didn't want to specialize on just the graphic part. So I chose communication design and studied that for 4 years in Berlin. And I kind of worked for, you could say, traditional companies as a designer working on user interfaces. But I always had some kind of side project going on. And after 1 year into my studies, I decided to try the whole freelancing thing. And yeah, just pretty much financed my whole studies by working as a freelancer for Berlin startups, business people. And after then doing an internship in Zurich with information architects, I kind of liked Switzerland. And yeah, then I heard about this master's program. Yeah, and the whole thing was now over 2 years ago. And I'm pretty much done with the master's degree. So you could say started off drawing a lot of stuff, being in the artistic side, and then realizing how much joy I get from well-designed stuff. I kind of took it from there. And yeah, it's not only a job. It's really I read about it. I think about it. I analyze stuff in my free time. And yeah, my family always has to hear to me complaining about how people don't put thought into things. And they've kind of developed a design view as well, I would say.
What does your typical day look like?
I'm really a morning bird or a early bird, as you could say. So some people call it extreme, but I usually get up at like 5 or 5:30 because I get the most work done in the mornings because there's no email, no distractions, nothing at all. So I'm very productive there, but I just go to bed earlier at night. I then eat warm in the mornings. And then if I go to study at university, I either have courses or I check in with my mentors, which have been a very helpful guide for the whole NutriDelta company. And if I go to work at that day, which is currently on 2 to 3 days a week, then I'd say there's no fixed routine, and there are always smaller and larger problems, and there's no day where you don't have to concentrate on staying calm and not rushing things. So I like that there's not a lot of routine, but I think that's quite distinctive for our job as a designer.
Absolutely. In your work, you're one of those dangerous people who can do both visual design and front-end implementation of that. Yes. I'm envious. I'm so happy for you.
Thanks a lot. It's just practice. I think everyone can do it.
What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
I'd say, after a product has launched, just seeing people use the things that you've made, or if it's some kind of branding, for example, I did a branding style guide for a company which is like the Amazon for fixed term deposits, where you can buy deposits in other countries and get better interest rates. And when you hear other people talking about the product, oh, have you heard about them? And then you say, oh yeah, I did that website you are on at the moment. I really like that feeling, and just this feeling of creating something that hasn't been there before And, you know, the struggle that you have at the beginning when you don't know what will come out. And then there's like this click moment when suddenly you get it and then everything starts rolling and then you start solving a problem, really. Yeah, that really fills me with joy. So that's one part which I really enjoy being a designer. What I don't like, just as I mentioned, you don't know what's going on. That's also a part which can be frustrating sometimes, that you don't know if you're doing the right thing. You know, this typical startup slang where people say fail forward or fail faster. You have to really iterate your way to a good solution, which is, I think, the right way. But still, sometimes when you're confronted with clients which are used to doing something in 5-year plans or something, you must kind of teach them that that's not the way you work. And that takes a lot of energy, but I think it's worth it for good solutions, really. And everything we can see, we can also judge. So as I said, like, people can say, I don't like that dress, or I don't like that color, or this looks weird. So sometimes you really have to work on your arguments for your solution. But if you see it from another perspective, you could also say, if you don't have enough arguments for your solution, maybe what you did is not that good, actually.
Exactly. I think designers, and also possibly people who do construction work, putting the final touches, yeah, everybody can see the problems there. Everybody can judge, as opposed to code, for example.
Yeah. It's just a mess, and people trust the specialists. But when it comes to design, sometimes people think they are the specialists. But there are a lot of people who actually also leave that to designers and trust the decisions. And I think there's kind of a shift happening over the last few years where the importance of design has really become apparent, I think. So yeah, companies know that, okay, there's this field has its justification, and we need it, and we can't outsource this whole thing. And I think there's a betterment going on, and like the whole complaining of designers that oh, nobody respects me is going away a bit. But that's just my personal impression that
I have. I'm totally on board with that. I think we're pretty lucky to live in these years where it's actually popularized. Finally, people know what UI UX is, and yeah, it's way easier. I'm totally there.
Yeah, they really see the value that it also creates economically, you know, not just, oh, this looks nicer, because there's also like really a business effect coming from that.
Exactly.
That work.
What is your next big thing?
My next big thing. Well, I'm finishing my master's degree in January, so I have like 2 weeks to go. So every day I'm writing on my thesis and working on the prototype, which are putting out. But the next big thing I would say is I'm starting a new job in February at a company as a product designer. But this role will really be like, in a small startup, which is financed by a big Swiss IT company. So we are 5 people at the beginning, and design is really put into the center of also business decisions. So it's not like, hey, our developers came up with feature X. Can you make the buttons look awesome? I don't know. So it's really like, what kind of features are we building for what customer, and what do they need? Ferdinand, take 2 people with you and go interview those people, talk to them. And this is really what I've been looking for, is positioning myself in like this triangle of management, code, and design, like being the communicator between those three, understanding each discipline a bit, design a bit more. And I'd say that's my next big thing. I'm very much looking forward to that.
That is fantastic. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you.
So let's go back to our main topic. I'm looking at your article right now, which inspired me to invite you and talk about this topic, which is your logo is copied. And it resonated with me so much. The topic is definitely not new, but... Mm-hmm. In our daily work, we as professionals kind of repeat the same decisions so often that the difference between copying and feeling guilty about it is so small. Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to refer to this topic, to write an article about that?
Mm-hmm. It kind of started with, like I mentioned in the intro, I'm always walking around and analyzing things, and that came to a point where I started seeing logos, which I thought it was a certain brand. And then I figured out it was a completely different brand. And then I just took a picture of it with my phone. And over time, these pictures just accumulated in a note on my phone. And then I read a book called Logo Modernism, which features like the most... iconic logos from the 1940s to the 1980s, I think. And in there, while looking through the pages, I also saw a lot of things which I thought, like, I know this from somewhere. And then I just did some research on where the logos came from and who originally came up with it. And then I really thought about it, okay, but the logo, which I think is the original, is that really the original? And maybe you've also seen this in web design, that we've kind of come up with a standard way to design interfaces or certain usage concepts because they just work for most people and it's become kind of a standard, and we don't want to confuse people with new interaction concepts all the time, which can be very good, but maybe it's also limiting you to come up with new things. So as I kind of dug into this world of logos and who came up with it, and I really started asking myself, is it really that bad to copy? And what does to copy mean, and what does to steal mean? But I think we'll dive into those two terminologies later on.
All right, let's dive into them. I would love to hear your take, what the difference is between actually copying and stealing stuff.
Yes. So copying for me is like an example which I made in the article, similar to how children learn, for example. So when a child learns how to walk, or to grab something or to eat with a spoon, the parent first shows how to do it. So the parent goes in front of the child, takes the spoon and puts the spoon into their own mouth, and then kind of tells the child, and now you do it. And now then the child tries to copy the whole thing. And after also seeing this... web series called Everything is a Remix by Kirby Ferguson, I think. He also mentions that many, many great artists or musicians or also designers started off by pretty much copying things. So there's this example which I dug out of a journalist called Hunter Thompson, who apparently typed out The Great Gatsby by Fitzgerald. Not like rewriting the book or anything, just retyping every letter of the book to kind of get a feeling what great writing feels like and what it feels like to make a great novel. And many musicians start off by doing cover songs, and that's how they learn an instrument, actually. And that's kind of the way how I see copying is not that bad if it's used to really learn. And the difference from copying to stealing, stealing really is when you take something and don't really ask if this is the appropriate solution for your problem. So if we think about a logo, for example, and let's say your logo is, well, let's say your company is called Medium, where I published the article first, then you might ask yourself, okay, it's fancy to have a letter as a logo. That's why I will just go online, go on Behance and look for logos with the letter M. And then you just pick out whatever looks cool to you. Yeah. And then you just take that and use it as your new logo without really asking, does this communicate the values which my company actually has? And I think that is stealing. So really avoiding the hard work of coming up with a design solution, while copying is just borrowing from the best and really always having in mind and questioning yourself, is this copying which I'm doing at the moment, is it really the appropriate solution for what I'm trying to do?
Yeah, you've touched on so many things just in one response of yours. One is repeating the work, the existing work of somebody else, professional, just to learn how exactly they work. That is totally great, because you don't publish that work as your own, I guess. I remember in like 15 years ago when I was getting started, there was a site called Template Monster, I think, and there were very skeuomorphic, high fidelity templates with papers and paper clips and stuff like that. And I would just go pick one I really like and recreate everything from scratch with all those shadows and everything. It was a great learning experience.
Yeah, and I bet you learned like so much of using the program, and as you become more mature as a designer and really develop the way you see things, I think you might have these techniques or like this archive in your head of what is possible and how you can combine things, but still, what comes out is more or less a remix of all these impressions which you've made in your life. And that's what we call, or what others call, maybe the creative genius or whatever. But it's just creating combinations and associations combined with knowledge from psychology, how to use certain elements to create a the right effect of people who are in contact with your work. And just as you mentioned, like Template Monster or taking code snippets or going on GitHub and cloning a repository to your computer, looking into the code, how did they do that? Oh, this is the way it worked. And then you copy that code and then you change a few variables or adapt it to your use case. And that's how you know how to build, I don't know, a date picker or a custom drop-down menu or something like that. And yeah, you didn't write it yourself, and you copied from others, more or less. And that's also where mentorship comes in, I think. You're asking people from their experience, what can I copy from you? So that I don't, take 5 years to make, mistakes, which I don't need to make maybe. Yeah. So they can kind of guide you into, the right direction and give you some advice. So you're kind of copying the experience which they already made.
Absolutely. And I think with code, you don't exactly just copy snippets, but you copy the approach that they use, which is, of course, inevitable, because why would you reinvent the wheel for that?
Yeah, Certainly. Yeah.
What about that process that we call getting inspiration? When you mentioned we go to Dribbble or Behance and we explore existing solutions, hoping to find some ideas that can be useful in your project. Mm-hmm. Do you do something of that yourself?
Actually, I have a Dribbble account and I had a Behance account. I deleted myself from Behance, and from Dribbble, I only visited sometimes when I'm really stuck and I really want to see something new. Yeah, because when I have the feeling I'm not satisfied with what I created and I'm kind of stuck, that's when I go to these platforms and look at things. But if you go to my profile on Dribbble, you also see that the very first post which I published was just a gray picture with a black text where it just says hello, period. Mm-hmm. And in the description, I kind of rant about the whole Dribbble universe where, we're just commenting, oh, awesome concept, like my work too, or go check out my work, or nice, or like. But there's no really feedback or criticism culture going on these platforms. And yeah, I have the feeling everyone's designing dashboards or weather apps or fancy date pickers or something like that. But you never really get to see like the context where this interface element happens. I agree that's not exactly the use case for Dribbble. It's more or less like showing snapshots of your daily work. But still, it's like very much focused on look how smooth this animation looks, or how nice this gradient fades in this chart. Then we're like kind of limiting ourselves to like the visual appearance of things, but not... There's like no description of what problem this actually solves. So it's just pure eye candy, as you would say. So consume it with care, I would say. And don't just copy what you see there because it looks nice, but always have like this, as a meditation, have like this observer view of looking at yourself when you're creating something and like really saying, Ferdinand, is this really the right thing to use right now? Or are you just using it because you think it's kind of cool?
That's a great piece of advice. I usually go there to see trends for that very eye candy when I need, you know, some inspiration for the visual side of things. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, that's not the topic I wanted to ask you about. Trends... they imply, you know, similar use of similar things all around the web. For example, a couple years ago, every single web app was done in Proxima Nova with very similar style. These days, we get a lot of very bold headlines, custom font, all this, you know, solid black stuff, diagonal lines
Very, very graphic letters all over the page.
Everybody copying the latest Stripe website, you know, myself included for client work, because clients come to me with that example. How far can we go, you know, designing for trends, copying what we see and making trendy stuff ourselves? How do we go around that?
A trend, I think, in its name, implicits that it's something temporary. And I think the goal of each designer, thinking back to maybe the times of Braun's industrial design of Dieter Rams, maybe that like a device coming from the 1960s, you see a picture of it and you could imagine, this was produced last week and it still looks up to date. I think that's kind of the aesthetic that many people are going for, that you create something, which is really sustainable also. So, a trend in itself is, should always be questioned, like, is this the right solution for you? And I really like the approach at Information Architects, which we had, is reduced to the essence. Like, for each client, we want to bring out its inside, more or less. So what you are like, we want to create the shape for that, more or less. And with the trend, there are certain things which are which I like seeing, which are going into the right direction. So you probably also remember the time when everything was getting flat.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think iOS 7 kind of kicked that off when suddenly we didn't have these leathery notebooks anymore.
Thanks goodness. Or, yes.
Yeah. I kind of liked it. It was, it had a certain charm to it. And then suddenly everything got flat. And flat design itself, you know, wasn't something completely new. It's inspired by elements from the Bauhaus area or the international typographic style, sometimes also called Swiss style. So we had like this very, very flat interfaces, only outlines, very reusable, very easy to create, but still. Google then figured out, we kind of need the Z-axis. We need depth.
Right.
So then suddenly came this remix where Google came up with the material design guidelines where they said, okay, we have flat looking elements, but we combine this whole thing by thinking of it like paper sheets, which are laid on top of each other, like material. Yeah. And then... like the best of both worlds was taken, the simplicity of solid shapes and solid colors combined also with the perception of depth and the feedback that you get when you press something that is still has like this analogy to the real world, that you really get a feeling although you're pressing a screen, you know, the ripple effect, which they had for the button. And with this, I think that a trend kind of kicked off a thinking into the right direction. But a trend should also, like the inspiration part with Dribbble, should also be considered with care, I think, because I think inspiration or trend, you can get very quickly into the area of trying to outsource doing the hard thinking work about your design process. And that's very simple sometimes because clients come to you and like you said, they said, we want to look like Stripe. And if you're confronted also with budget limitations, sometimes you just do it, you know, and get yourself inspired by how it looks, how it animates, how it feels, and then you take elements from that to make the client satisfied. But you have to think in the real world, I think, because there's always money involved and you have to make also a economically sustainable business. But if you really think about like the ideal state of design, which we should all thrive for, I think you should always be the honest voice to the client and saying, well, is this really you if we make it look like Stripe? So... trends can be a good development, but can also be sometimes just taken without further thinking. And I don't think too much of that.
One more concern that I face on a daily basis in work. As a UX designer, I work with multiple products. And of course, I keep making the same decisions because from, many years of experience, I think this is the best way of doing stuff. And so I faced a lot of guilt by offering very similar solutions to many people at once. Even though, of course, that's applicable to their situation, it's still sometimes same patterns or maybe same visual solutions, because really, how different can you get? There's a number of fonts I like, and there's, you can make the buttons rounded or square, and that's it. That's as far, that's as much as you can do.
Border radius, five pixels.
Yeah, I usually do four. Anyways, yes, that's the way to go. Do you feel guilty on repeating yourself in your work, and how do you recommend other people think about that to not go crazy?
Yeah. I think actually it's not too bad, because I think it's a sign that UX design in general is kind of growing up, that we've come up with kind of standardized ways of doing things which a large majority of people understands to do. And suddenly the focus really of design also moves to other parts of not just how do I use, let's use the date picker example once again, like how do I use a date picker? But it's like, what is the product, or how do you design the voice of a brand if you're really thinking about like a auditive voice? Yeah. And suddenly those areas are parts where you kind of make yourself distinctive and not so much anymore in the user interface elements. And if you think about other professions, be it a plumber or in the construction business as general, there are certain ways to do things which have worked for a long time. And then there are people who are innovating some part, but like the base stays the same. And I think we are kind of in that phase that we have standardized ways of doing things, and we can say, well, this works for people because, I mean, if you ask people, where would you look for a button to close a window, most of them will say, well, top right corner. Or where would you look for contact information? Oh, probably at the bottom of the page. Those are like behaviors which are learned by people. And I think it's a very good development to have that we can rely on certain things that just work, and we don't have to test them all the time. And if you find yourself creating the same solution over and over, I'd say expand your view above the interface element which you're doing at the moment, which I mentioned, and really ask, like, in what context is this whole thing happen? What can I improve apart from just this small part of a website? So maybe it's how that you develop a tonality and voice guideline for the writing staff or customer service. And those are also areas which have to be designed, I think. And I think it'll go more into the whole content thing, because the shape in which it is shown gets replaceable over time, you know? It's more or less what we read and not how it is shown.
Exactly. As we're wrapping up today's episode, what advice would you give to all the designers who are listening to us today so that they can stay at peace with the fact that everything has been done before us multiple times?
Yes.
And so they can sleep well, you know, what is your advice for them?
I would say, don't run away from difficult conversations because you want to keep the peace. You're kind of expected to also raise your voice when you see that things are going in the wrong direction. So when you see that somebody's just copying something, but it doesn't really fit your solution, then mention that. And easy shouldn't be an option. Never be comfortable. Never be satisfied. And my motto for the coming year 2018 is a quote which I read in Steve Jobs' biography: "Stay hungry, stay foolish. Also, try out new things."
Absolutely. Thank you for great advice and for sharing your opinion. Maybe it will exactly help our audience to deal with that better.
I hope so.
Where can people find you and your work online?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm on Twitter at Ferdinand Vogler, or on my website, ferdinandvogler.com. You can see some of my work and also see other contact opportunities. And I'm very much open to other views and discussions as well, because I think that only brings us forward.
Thank you so much, Ferdinand, for finding time and sharing your insight today.
Thank you.
And have a great day.
You as well. Have a great one.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.